I can go on to another question about this. Somebody says, do you have to have sexual intercourse for a healthy relationship? What I always say about this is some people like chicken, some people like steak, and some people like chicken salad. This is not usually considered a problem in restaurants. And there's no reason for it to be a problem in your relationship. If you and your spouse both think that sexual intercourse is about as interesting as a bowl of oatmeal, I don't think that the sexual intercourse police are going to come into your house and say, you have got to amp it up. You know, I think you should do as you like. You know, there are lots of other things that people like to do. And truly, if you've been married for a fairly long time, I hope you get to do them. Because even if it's prime rib, people, no one wants to eat roast beef every night of the week. And I think it is all right to say to your spouse, honey, no one wants to eat roast beef every night of the week, and to work out some alternatives. So if the question is, do you have to have a lot of sex to have a healthy relationship, this depends entirely on what the two people want. I have seen people very, very and genuinely happily married who I happen to know have not had any sexual contact in 6 years. But that lady is not one of them.
Now, and the other thing that I would like to add, and this is, of course, something we can't do as an audio, but we can do as a visual. And some of you I've told this to.
What are you going to do as a visual?
I don't know. I'm going to show them my hands.
Oh, sorry.
I'm not going to strip. Don't worry. Anyway. Jeez. Anyway. But the thing is, the problem in a relationship that I've been asked, you know, questions similar to that. The issue is a discrepancy in desire.
Right.
That's the concern. If both people have desire up here, it's fine. If both people have desire here, it's fine. The problem is when you got this. That's a problem, okay? One person's got high desire for something, one person's got no desire, or vice versa. That's a problem.
It is a problem, and I also think it's a complicated problem because when you begin to explore this as a couple or individually, it turns out that it's not necessarily just a difference in sexual desire. It also has to do with things like, I've been angry with you for 20 years. Tonight, I am particularly angry with you. The thought of having sex with you, only if I'm armed. You know? And I think that is not primarily about, you know, the physical function of libido. There are a million other things that enter into your sex life and a million other calculations. You know, who likes sex for release and who likes sex as an expression of closeness? Who would like it to be an expression of closeness, but if there's not a lot of closeness, then what is it for? And one of the things that I think Mary Jane and I have both seen in women, especially in the middle of their life, is that the function of sex has changed and what women feel that they are getting out of it is different. And so sometimes, although it is true that hormones might help, you also encounter women who are like, nah, that's okay. I'll just not have sex and blame it on my hormones. And again, you have to be honest with yourself. I'm not saying you have to be honest with your spouse, but your life will be better if you are honest with yourself about desire. You got one that you want to take?
Well, I think we've got a couple of questions on this, and just for some of our slightly premenopausal crowd here, there's basically a couple of questions about fertility, and Amy and I have been talking about this.
Yeah.
About younger women and their delaying of fertility and childbearing. And we've been discussing this with children that we know of and young women that we know of. So the question here is there a higher or lower chance for a woman in her 40s to get pregnant if she never had children before? That's the question here. And to be honest, unfortunately, this really gets us back to the question that Amy and I have been talking about as far as age and childbearing. It really doesn't have too much bearing whether you've had kids before or not. I personally have delivered three women who were age 47 who were not trying to get pregnant. It was sort of like it happened. That's my personal record. I have delivered one woman who was 50 with donor eggs. and that's not the Guinness Book of Records by any means. But fertility does tend to diminish with age. Now, not zero. Remember those 43, 47-year-olds who had no interest in having children? It was like they thought they were really far into perimenopause when the period kept spacing out. That's true. This is honest to God true for all of them. But anyway, that unfortunately there is sort of a time clock that we all face. Most of our young women, and many people in this room would like to say to women, go ahead, go for your careers, go with gusto for your careers and stuff like that, and you can have a child. We can do anything we want. Well, unfortunately, there is somewhat of a time limitation. And before 35, there's not a huge decline in fertility. Once we get back to beyond 35, things start slowing down, and there's sort of a decline 35 to 40. Once you get to 40, there's a significant decline. And then if you look at all the statistics on childbearing, there's the below 35, 35 to 40, 41, 42. Once you get beyond 42, the rates are fairly low. So when I do have young women who are coming in for counseling about, you know, delaying childbearing and stuff like that, I don't tell them to put it on eternal hold and, you know, wait till you're 45 and president of Chase Manhattan Bank and then go for it. No, probably not a good idea. The corollary of that, by the way, when I give a lecture to the undergraduates at Yale, which I have the privilege of doing a couple of times a year, and I see them with a cigarette and I start having a shit fit. And I say, you ain't going to have kids at age 45. You're smoking, that I'll guarantee. Because one thing to remember is that smoking cigarettes actually accelerates the age of menopause by about 1 to 2 years. So if you really want to go through menopause early, take up smoking. But anyway, there are better ways to do it than that. So anyway, so unfortunately, there are some time clocks that we have to face, and Amy deals with this in counseling young women regularly.
Well, I do, and it is very hard. I mean, the world changes, you know. Women do not primarily marry so that they will have a man who will protect them, since they have no right to vote and no property rights and no capacity to get an education or earn a living. So once that world went away, you had to examine why it is that people marry, and what it is that they expect to have in their home when they marry. And all of that then begins, if you don't want there to be any divorce in this country, I would say you need to take away the vote and the education and the right to make a living. There was a significant jump in the divorce rate when women began to have more choices about that. The other side of choice, sort of the unintended consequence of choice, is that women still have to deal, and men have to deal with the women who are dealing with it, with biology. And it's going to be very complicated, I think, especially for the upcoming generation, in which the 20s is often considered an extension of adolescence. It is now post-college adult life. To also fit into the conversation, and good luck to you, I also have daughters, good luck to you in saying, oh, by the way, honey, I don't know if you noticed this article that I printed up from the Society for Reproductive blah, 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 but TikTok, you know. And mostly I think it is our job, if we are older, to stay out of it, unless you are lucky enough to be asked, in which case the thing that matters is not how you feel about grandchildren, which doesn't matter at all, but what the young women in your life whom you like and care about need to know medically from the scientific point of view. And all you can do is offer information and then make the heroic effort of keeping your mouth shut. I have a question here. I thought this was very interesting. Why do men cheat on women who are uglier than their wives? All of you who are watching the news, I know you have said to yourself, I cannot bear to think about the Middle East situation another minute. I'm going to think about Arnold Schwarzenegger. And then the woman writes, is this our fault? Which I have to say, if there is ever going to be anything written on the dark side of the epitaph for women, it will be, is this my fault? Why do men cheat on women? Well, there is also always the question of why do men cheat entirely, and I will leave the entire evolutionary, anthropological, it's in there wherever's. Obviously, I did not go to medical school. But uglier, not uglier is almost never relevant. The way I would put this, and this is not in any way, by the way, to condone or recommend infidelity for men or for women, but I am looking at a room full of women, and I want to say, have you never gone to Burger King? Have you never had a kind of crappy piece of chocolate instead of a fabulous piece of chocolate? Because what was put right in your hand was not very good chocolate. On the other hand, there it was. Again, this is not... I am not giving permission. I am not recommending. I am not suggesting that you do what French women pretend to do, which is to pretend to look away and pretend not to care. That's not what I'm suggesting. But I am suggesting that things like uglier, not uglier, are usually not relevant. If you are a certain kind of man and you have a certain kind of emptiness and hollowness within you, the thing that is going to fill that is a quick burst of excitement and energy and admiration and sexual performance on the part of somebody to whom you have no ties and who does not know what you look like when you have a cold or you have failed to comb your hair properly or how you looked 25 years ago. And that tends to be the answer for an awful lot of men. There are other more specific things, but I would say ugly, not ugly, has absolutely nothing to do with the equation. The issue is what lies within the man. The issue is never what lies, it seems to me, within his partner.
Well said. So, couple of... on a more mundane note here, we have several questions, as Amy alluded to, about weight gain and things around menopause and being fabulous and stuff. But let me read a few of them as sample questions, and I'll chat about them a bit. I'm 52, have been thin my whole life. I exercise 3 times a week, don't eat a lot, now have too much weight around the middle. We get some more belly fat. I do sit-ups, and it doesn't go away. Why not? My metabolism, say that 5 times fast, has slowed. What can I do to help speed it up? We have more questions along those lines. You want the good news first or the bad news? All right. Well, I'll give you both. You know you're going to get both anyway. Basically, unfortunately, the older we get, the slower our basal metabolic rate gets. That's for boys and girls, men and women. That happens to both of us. We lose muscle mass. If we don't keep up our muscle mass, we have a slower burn rate, even though we might set out with by keeping it up there. Unfortunately, perimenopausally, women tend to gain about 5 to 8 pounds, okay, doing the same exercise, the same nutrition and stuff like that. That's the bad news, okay. The good news, it's not a 5 to 8 pound annual weight whack. It's a perimenopausal weight whack. It's there. Can you get rid of it? Yeah, by more exercise and eating less, but it's harder. But when I have somebody coming in who says, oh, this damn menopause, I've gained 30 pounds from it, it's like, no. You didn't gain 30 pounds from menopause. It's called cookies, okay? And unfortunately, that's the truth, folks. I mean, there are outliers, and yes, there are some people that, exercise nonstop and they still gain. But the issue is 5 to 8 pounds we can attribute to perimenopause. The rest of it, unfortunately, is probably eating a little too much and exercising a little too little. For a few people, thyroid dysfunction occurs, and basically all of us should have our thyroid functions checked at about age 50, and if it hasn't been, it's worth checking. Thyroid dysfunction is more common in women than men, and it is worthwhile checking. And it's the one disease I love to diagnose. Some of you in this room, perhaps, I believe, have had a call from me saying, guess what? You've got abnormal thyroid function. Yes, this is great. Ah, we love it. Because this is truly, take this pill, you'll lose weight. It's fabulous. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen to all of us. And it is worth checking a set of TFTs, but most of the time it doesn't turn out to be the case. And so, again, as Amy said, if you gain 5 to 8 pounds of your normal weight to begin with, well, that's not going to put you into the massively obese category anyway, so don't sweat it too much. And there are other things that Amy will point out are probably more important to life. So again, lots of exercise, good nutrition, exercise as much as you can. Join me at the gym. And what I did last night at the gym, I have to tell you, this is true confessions time. If anybody was at Branford Planet Fitness last night, you will have noticed that the CNN channel was off. So I had no excuse. I had to watch entertainment tonight. So I saw all the Arnold stuff. It was fabulous.
One of my introductions to the wonderful world of hormones was actually Mary Jane saying to me, well, we can do this, we can do that. I can put you on the patch. She said, I myself would use the patch, but I sweat like a pig at the gym. It just slides right off. And so I thought, okay, well, I'm not going to get the patch for the exact same reason. But I also want to say something, which is, I have a number of questions here which are either about belly fat or body image, and also about eating disorders and sort of body dysmorphia. And I want to say two things. One is, if you have daughters who are growing up, or even who are grown up, but especially who are in the process of growing up, it would behoove you to try to behave as if you liked your body, even if you don't. You know, it is very rare that, I have to say, it is very rare that I saw a girl with an eating disorder whose mother did not have very strong issues about eating, exercise, and her own sense of her body. This is not to blame mothers, which is all too easy to do. But I will say, this issue comes up so often for so many women. If you find that when you get out of bed in the morning, the first thing you think about is how much you hate your body, the reason you don't want to have sex is because you hate your body, and the idea of being touched will remind you that you have a body and that is unbearable to you, that is not healthy body consciousness. That is a problem. If you cannot enjoy your life, despite the 5 to 8 pounds or the tummy that pooches out, which I realize is just hideous. I mean, I realize it's like a very distressing thing. You go like, oh my God, my stomach pooches out and it didn't used to. I have two things to say to you. The first thing is Spanx. The second thing, what I loved was the original version of What Not to Wear was done by these two English women, which if you've ever seen it, is so much better than the American version. Because one of them is basically, as she says, I won't do it with an English accent. You know, tall and thin, no tits, no bum, no waist. And the other one says, and I actually look like a wheel of Stilton, except for my Spanx. And they would go on, and they would like go out to some pub in Manchester, and they'd be like pulling off their shirts, showing their Spanx, and saying, really, what you need is a good bra. And I want to say that one of the things that you want to do if you feel like your stomach pooches out is get a really good bra to call attention to those things that you want to have sticking out. And the other thing is that you want to say to yourself, gosh, you know, here I am, a smart, attractive, interesting person. Maybe I should be thinking about running for public office, getting involved in charitable activities, pursuing my career as an ex, improving my sex life, or whatever it is. You know, taking up lacrosse, or embroidery, or woodwork, or archaeology. But if what you think about all the time is that your stomach pooches out, your problem is not that your stomach pooches out. Your problem is something else, and you owe it to yourself to understand why that is the thing you focus on when you cannot bring yourself to focus on the actual quality of your actual life. On to you.